Good morning, everybody. My name is Bo Sanders. If we haven't had a chance to meet, I am one of the pastors who helps facilitate this gathering. And I just want to let you know that we're going to do the same thing this week that we did last week, where we're going to make sure we end on time, because just across the hallway in the fellowship hall is a conversation about Abraham's broken family. And today we're talking about, why do people join ISIS? What's the appeal of a group like ISIS? So that's going to be a fun conversation, I can see by your face. Yeah, we don't shy away from heavy topics here. So if you are looking for a church that is shallow and superficial, we're probably not that. We really dive into things. So you'll see that. You're looking for that? I can talk to me after the service. I'll help you find one that'll fit you better, Ryan. So I want to start with just a moment of grace. I'm going to show this video, and it'll set the tone for us, and then we're going to start low, and we're going to build as the day goes. We're going to have a lot of fun. I'm glad you're here, and I hope that you will jump into the conversation.
God is not a man. God is not a white man. God is not a man sitting on a cloud. God cannot be bought. God will not be boxed in. God will not be owned by religion. But God is love. God is love, and He loves everyone. God is love. God is love, and she loves everyone. God is not a man. God is not an old man. God does not belong to Republicans. God is not a flag, not even American. And God does not depend on a government. But God is good. God is good, and He loves everyone. Charlatans and communists and lesbians and even old Pat Robertson, oh God, He loves us all. Catholic or Protestant, terrorist or president, everybody, everybody love.
Come to that moment in our week when we sit in a room with a whole bunch of people quietly and pray. Let's pray together. Gracious God, who defines yourself to us as love, we long to be those types of people. People who love. For those who are loved greatly, love greatly. So as we come together in your presence this morning, we open ourselves to the possibilities that you are doing good and great things in us, that you are calling us forward for a better tomorrow in our own hearts, in the families we inhabit, in the friendships we develop, in the workplaces we live in day to day, in the nation we reside, and in the world that you love so greatly. So as we bring some conversations to the surface about this life you've entrusted to us, will you allow us to do it graciously, in an adult manner? Would you allow us to do it with that same love in mind? And as we share our lives together, new babies being born, and lives in transition, relationships growing to the next point, all the things that make this life so sweet and so good, that this good gift that resides with us, would you allow us to palpably feel it today? In this moment, because so many other moments blitz by, can we feel the goodness of the life you've given us? We pray this.
So before I moved to Los Angeles, I was quite the outdoorsman, and I had a large selection of camouflage clothing for the various activities that I might be engaged in. But one of the things I could never really get my head around was wearing camo when you weren't in the woods. But a lot of people had camo that they went fishing in. Sean was telling us about fishing, or that they would work on their ATV with, or whatever. And it always baffled me a little bit because I didn't grow up with camo. I came into it later in life, and it was very utilitarian. It just accomplished a purpose, which was to help you blend into the woods so that the animals you were trying to harvest for dinner couldn't see you. And so it always freaked me out a little bit when people would wear camo around. But then when I started looking at hunting magazines and hunting catalogs, I started seeing that you can get camo everything. One of my buddies actually got a camo iPhone case. And I said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. If you drop that thing in the woods, you're never going to find it. Like, you should get a pink OtterBox cover. And with that crowd, pink's not the color, you know, that they're really going for. So, Alex, if you can show. And so there's camo everything for your hunting lodge. I think you can get camo lingerie, camo bedspreads. Now, I don't know about you, but by the end of the day, the last thing I want to do is hunt for my bed. I don't want it for it to be hard to find. I don't know why you would want to camo a toilet, but you can. You can buy a kit that shrink wraps it. It's fantastic. You can buy camo everything. So one of the things I figured out, some of you are shaking your heads, and I appreciate that. One of the things I figured out is camo, while it is in its original design, the purpose is to help you blend in. Something happens in a consumer society where we personalize and tailor everything, where we get it customized. And then camo became something that helped you not blend in, but stand out. It became a way to broadcast what tribe you were a part of. And so having all this camo stuff signifies that you're part of a group, a niche, a subgroup. And so when we are going to talk today, I want to talk about our symbols. What happens when our symbols no longer are connected to what they were historically, what gave life to them, what birthed them, the community that designed them? And what does it mean for us to have signifiers, words that we use, religious symbols, whatever, that no longer signify the thing that they're originally intended to? So, Alex, can you go to the next one? So, I've mentioned before that about 10 years ago when I was walking through the mall, I walked past Spencer Gift. I didn't go in. Don't worry. But as I walked by, I noticed that they had a huge selection of t-shirts on display in the front window. And you could buy everything from a Jesus t-shirt to Che Guevara. Bob Marley is a popular one there. Even Danica Patrick, right? And the amazing thing is that for us as end users or consumers, it might be really important what is on our t-shirt. Like, that really matters to us. But one of the things we come to realize is that we participate in this bigger system, in these structures, like an economy. And go to the next one. Every t-shirt, the real logo is this. This is the real logo on everything. Because the store doesn't care if you have a Jesus t-shirt, or a Darwin, or a Devil, or Danica Patrick, or Bob Marley. It doesn't matter, as long as you buy a t-shirt. Now, it's really important to us what's on our t-shirt. But in the bigger picture, the only thing that matters is that we buy t-shirts. In fact, we're so happy when we find the same Jesus t-shirt that we saw at Spencer's for $25 at Walmart for $4. We're like, yes, because I wanted a Jesus t-shirt, but I didn't want to pay $25. Now I only have to pay $4. Here's the problem. If you're going to wear Jesus t-shirts, one of the things you have to do is ask why the t-shirt's only $4. Because didn't it seem like to get the cotton together, to ship it to wherever it's produced, for the person who made the t-shirt, and then for it to be shipped back, shouldn't that cost more than $4? How is that shirt only $4? And how much is the person who made it? How many of those four are they getting? You can't just buy a Jesus t-shirt without asking, how did I come to have this Jesus t-shirt? Go to the next one. So the other thing I want to talk about when we talk about clothing is, have you ever noticed when we have a future, kind of sci-fi movies, when we think about what we'll dress like in the future, that everybody, whether it's The Fifth Element or Star Trek or whatever it is, everyone's uniforms end up kind of looking the same. Have you noticed this? There's like this futuristic thing where fashion is out the window and everyone just wears these full body kind of matching unitards. Have you noticed this? And I don't know if that's a lack of imagination and creativity or if it's actually a prophetic critique of fashion. And then in the future, we're like, forget it. Let's just all wear the same thing. It's easier. So I read this book about the difference between uniforms and costumes. And it turns out that uniforms are a really important thing because they have an inside function and an outside function. The outside function is that when you have a uniform on, you are distinguishing yourself as a group from those outside the group. So whether it's a military uniform, a sports uniform, whether it's a nursing, whatever it is, clergy, we have these uniforms in our lives. So they distinguish us from an external group, right? They demarcate who we are. But the other thing about uniforms is that inside the group, we have ranking systems. So in the military, you may have stars or bars or whatever. In clergy circles, there's different ways that we signify what rank or how long you've been doing something. Football teams put stickers on the helmets, whatever it is. So that there's an outside function. We're not those people. But there's also an inside function, which is a ranking system inside. Uniforms play a really important role in our society. Hit the button one more time. One more time. But it turns out that a costume is much like a uniform. The only difference is you're the only one wearing it. That's basically the differentiation between a uniform and a costume. Are there other people who wear it? No, then it's just you. But this got me thinking. I have this coffee shop in Westwood Village that I love going to. It's kind of sadistic. They treat me very badly. I've been there with some of you. It's a very pretentious coffee shop run by some type of rogue hipster cult. And if you don't stand in the right place, if you don't pay the right way, if you don't order the drink in the right time, they will skip you. They treat you really, it's very dismissive. They own the coffee, and you come to them. They're like the priestesses of coffee. And if you don't come to them on their terms, no coffee for you. That's how it feels. But one of the things I noticed is that though everyone in there is free to dress however they want, they all end up dressing very similar. Right? Skinny jeans, flannel shirt, beanie. Right? It's almost like it's a uniform, but it's not. It's just a costume that everyone has chosen to wear at the same time. So as we talk through today symbols from camo, we're going to end up talking about crosses and the role that they play in our religious imagination. I wanted to introduce the idea that inside a consumer culture where you are making choices of where to put your dollars, how to itemize, accessorize, personalize everything you own, from your iPhone to your Subway sandwich, you're in charge. Burger King, their big tagline is, you can have it your way. You're in charge. You're the god of your own life. You are the high chair tyrant sitting in the middle of your circle, barking commands to everything around you. And though life feels like it's out of control, and you feel like you don't ultimately have much say, and life so often infringes on you and actually is very inconvenient for you, the reality is that you are the central player in the own drama of your life. And there's something very powerful about acknowledging that, and then for us as a community to come together and figure out what we're going to do as agents in our own story. So we're going to take a break. You can get a refill. If you brought an offering, you can put it in one of the baskets. If you have to use the restroom, you can use it across the fellowship hall. But try and meet somebody new. You have 4 minutes to do four things. I'll see you in 4 minutes. He gone and painted his entire Chevy Cavalier. Camouflage. Camouflage. Camouflage.
disappears when it pulls out of his garage.
Savior, I come, quiet my soul. Remember, redemption's here, your blood was spilled for my ransom. Everything once held dear, I count it all as loss. Lead me to the cross where your love poured out. Bring me to my knees, Lord, I lay me down. Rid me of myself, I belong to you. Oh, lead me.
Oh, the wonderful cross we sing as Christians. And one of the interesting things for me is that we have become not just appreciative of what happens on the cross, but we have actually, you know, kind of codify it. We actually worship the cross, right? So that's an interesting shift. It's not just the activity that happened there, but we kind of have made it a stand-in for the whole story of redemption. And now we really idolize the cross.
I don't like the cross. It's a problem for you.
It is. And every year when we come up on Easter, I'm like, how sensitive are we going to be about this? And like, we have to debate it, right? By the way, I love whatever this is.
This is great. Like you said, let's wear camouflage. So I got stuff out that I had. This was a great hat that I took hunting in Arizona, and it worked great. And then I took it back to Georgia, and I was with my dad, and like, there was nothing coming near us. And he's like, take off that stupid hat. I'm like, what's wrong? It was working great. Well, it works great in the desert, but if you put it in green camo, right? It's like, oh, that does.
Did you have this shirt on?
Right? But it's funny how camouflage in L.A., I went to the store and said, do you have anything camouflage? And this is what the guy pointed at. And he's like, oh, this is camouflage, right? And I went,
oh, you bought this?
I bought this.
Oh, interesting.
I went to the store this week, and I said, do you have any camouflage?
Oh, no.
And this is what the guy picked out for me. And I was like, well, I have to have it. So
you've made my day better.
It is.
By wearing this. I so appreciate it.
It's so, the analogy you were playing off with the camouflage, I think it really works. And I think the idea of what's going on behind that, how what is intentionally designed to allow us to be immersed in our environment, when it's put in the wrong, in a different place, it can make us stand out from our environment. And the same things happen with religious symbols. And your critique of the cross, I think, can do that a lot. That it, in one way, it embeds us within a religious system, but in some ways, it stands us out from other places.
Right, in a sense, it's like a uniform in that by wearing a cross, I identify with a group, right? I symbolize, in a sense, that I am part of something, a community, and I mark myself in a way of saying, I am part of this. But depending on what the cross is, you can get a cross tattoo, you can get wood cross with a hemp string tied around it,
sure.
You can get gold crosses, well, you can get diamond crosses.
But not only that, there's some crosses that are just a cross, and some cross have Jesus on the cross still.
Yeah.
So there's traditions that adopt different stories within the
cross. And you can tell if somebody's Catholic or Protestant,
exactly,
depending on,
if the cross is empty or if the cross has someone on it.
And so here's the thing that got me thinking is camouflage is originally designed to help you blend into your environment. So it makes sense that for our military folks, our armed forces, that they would wear their fatigues, right, when they're out in the field. But it's strange to me that we ask them, right, they're required to wear them when they're at the mall or in the airport. And in that sense, you have to pay attention because what was originally designed to help you blend into your environment is now being used to make you stand out from your environment. What was helping you disappear is now drawing attention to you. What was made so that you would be invisible, you are now broadcasting loudly your presence. There's a switch that's happening. And I think that it's not just happening there, but it's happening with us and our blinged up crosses. There's something weird happening where we go from, Jesus said, in the passage we heard read earlier, take up your cross and follow me, right? It's a sacrifice. But when we get to the point where we are accessorizing, right, our look and our fashion with expensive idols of the cross, I don't know another way to say it, right, symbols.
Yep.
And depending on our level of commitment to them, our level of fashion awareness, or our level of income, we have different kinds of crosses. There's something that has happened between take up your cross and follow me, and now we wear that same symbol to broadcast to the world that we follow the homeless Jew who died on a cross. Something weird's happening.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but parts of this series are putting some burrs under some saddles, we would say in the South, or it's got to be in the
bonnet.
Well, we
say a rock in your Birkenstock.
Yes,
around
that
here.
That would be good. Yeah. Something
West,
that that,
that Western,
works.
Yeah.
So I've had 8 different conversations, private, solicited conversations about this series and questions that are coming with it, and been myself trying to articulate back why we're doing what we're doing here. And I wanted to ask you some questions and kind of engage with some things within this series and go back way back in the tradition to see what's happening and pull this apart. So,
by the way, if you haven't been at the loft before, we do this thing, not only about 50% of our gathering is scripted, the other 50% is, so we're now in that unscripted part.
That was a disclaimer,
okay.
I think.
All right.
So,
just pull back the curtain a little bit.
So, this is from Matthew, and Jesus is having a confrontation with the Pharisees. And the Pharisees, as a subset of an entire group of religious leaders, that would be analogous to a party within our political system that's also married to a religious system and an economic system. There's all kinds of ties here. And Jesus is talking to them about fashion, but the way it gets translated, so I brought my Greek, and I know that seems a little nerdy, but I'm going to read some of the original words because those words are, they're linking to something. And this confrontation has been escalating throughout Matthew's book. Matthew has a sermon, then he has a story, some miracles happen, some parables. There's only a couple in there, and then there's another sermon, then we get to the last sermon, and this big confrontation happens. Many scholars think this is portrayed on the steps of the temple courts, and there's a fiery kind of casting out of the Pharisees that we're headed towards.
Okay.
So then Jesus said to the crowds and the disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. So practice and observe whatever they tell you, but do not do what they do. For they preach, but do not practice. They bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and they lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves do not move a finger to help. They do all these deeds to be seen by people." So here's some of the words I want to talk about. They make their, the Greek word phylacteria automakai, they make their phylactery flawed. And a phylactery, have you ever watched any of those old Jesus movies and you see these guys dressed in black and they have this wooden thing strapped to their forehead? You ever see that? So if you watch some of the older Jesus movies, And you can even find some Jewish communities mm-hmm. now that still practice this.
Right.
And they put this wooden box on their head, and there's some scriptures that are held within that box to remind them of the law. Mm-hmm. And this was meant to be a visible ornament. It was strapped to the front of your head to say, keep this in mind all the time. Yeah. And you could carry this on your forehead, or there was another pouch that strapped under your arm to carry it close to your heart.
Yeah.
And it was hidden under the clothes.
And we don't do a lot of stuff like that anymore. Like, can you imagine if we today, let's say, gave everybody an empty matchbox, and we wrote a Bible verse on it, and then we duct taped it to their forehead.
Yeah.
And we said, think about this Bible verse all week. That would work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be thinking about it because you couldn't look in the mirror without knowing it was there. And then, the Greek translation does not translate that, and many Bibles don't. They leave that word phylactery there.
That's one of those Greek words we often don't translate.
Yes, but many of the common English Bibles that we use today translate that word, and they leave it into, you leave your box, they put something else there, or they use this one, the fringe of your garment, but it's metonia, that they're talking about the tzitzit. So if you see on Friday, sometimes you see in our own neighborhood, some of our Jewish brothers and sisters walking around with a prayer shawl on, and it has a long tassel on the end. Mm-hmm. So the inside tassel on that has five knots on it, so you can remember the five books of the law. You pray through that tzitzit, and it has a blue strand through the middle of it. So there's a critique. You make your fringes of your garment long. There's no regulation about the length, and you make your phylactery wide. And that Jesus is critiquing that. And then he goes and says, you make your prayers big. You announce them, and this happens in another confrontation in another place in the same book. The tax collector goes to the shade of the temple, and the Pharisee goes to the center of the temple and says, woe is me, I'm not like one of these people.
Yeah.
You know, there's this critique about fashion and how it's being used religiously that Jesus has and is embedding that into our tradition to ask the question, why are you doing what you're doing? And his critique about the Pharisees is, you are getting your full reward.
Right. So whatever attention you get, that's your reward.
And I want to talk about that. Is that still a fair critique for us? If I'm wearing a cross and it means something to me, and it gives me some, if that's my reward, that's all I want from it, is that okay?
Yeah, okay. This is a great question. I appreciate you, Pastor Chris, bringing the Bible into this very much. And I appreciate that that you give us a historical framework, that this was a concern that Jesus had as well, that this is not a new thing, that this is a long-standing problem. Here's what I would say. As much of a problem as it was for what Jesus was confronting, it is magnified by X degrees in our day and age. Let me give you just a couple examples.
Okay, good.
So in that day, the Pharisees, it was a problem, but at least it was a uniform. They all had that, right? That's how the membership in the tribe, it distinguished them with these garments and these activities, right? And they were good people, by the way. They were really trying to hold to the law.
Yeah.
They get a bad rap because Jesus was like so close to them that he often came into contact with them. But we know them the best out of all those tribes and groups that were in Jesus' day. Yeah, because there was so much conflict with them, right? But here's what I would say is that even more than this thing that Jesus is critiquing, it is magnified so much more in our day and age for just in two simple ways. Number one, instead of having it like the Pharisees were a group, we are all just doing it as individuals. We make the choices about what we are going to buy into, what kind of accoutrements and accessories that we're going to participate in, right? There's no authority telling us from top down, wear this, do this, right? This is how you participate. Now we're free agents, and we're making decisions based on our own. So that's one, is the individualism. The other thing is that in Jesus' day, that culture and society was still very much village-oriented, right? It was most of the people in this room, have left our families of origin or the towns or villages that we were born into or raised in, and we have come here, and we are, in a sense, islands unto ourselves. At least in Jesus' day, there was still a communal aspect where they were connected through villages and families, right?
we are really free agents in a consumer market where we're making the decisions about what level we're going to participate in. We are the authorities in that sense. And so it's magnified so much more than even the thing Jesus is concerned about, because we have no connection. They call it atomistic. We are like little atoms bouncing around on our own, not connected to bigger stories.
So this is the heartbeat of some of the questions that have come up, some of the pushback of this thing that I think is really worth talking about, because I think you're highlighting a hyper-individualism that can happen in a consumer market society, and that how we bring that into our religious practice, and we, as you said last week, become gods of our own religion. And we make ourselves larger than the practice, and therefore nullify any benefit of that practice, because we've become so large within it, it doesn't critique us anymore. And I think that's a fair critique.
By the way, that was a great summary. I should have let you do that last week.
I think that asking these questions about real, fake, fake, real, and how we practice what we practice, to allow it to, it undoes that. The very act of asking the question undoes the elevation of self above the practice. However, I don't think fashion works like that. I think that the fashions we practice are so tribal and still have great influence over what we wear and how we wear it. The fact, the example of Profeta about how everybody and how the kind of the vicious coffee monger pulls everybody in. Like, when you order there, you have to dress like they do to get street cred. But I've also felt it in participating in West LA about my own fashion sense, and because I come from the backwoods, man, where you wear camouflage to church and it's all right, nobody's looking at you sideways. But here, you put this hat on and wear it around, it's to mark something else. But that tribalism is, in essence, what fashion is. It's tying us into other people and community and identifying as, oh, there's one like me. And what part of this series should do, and I think what Jesus is doing, is allowing people who participate in a group to ask big questions about the practice of the entire group. Because the pushback I've been hearing is, well, that sounds awful judgmental about other people. Well, the first side of that is to be judgmental of self, judgmental of my hyper-individualism, and is it actually working against me? Do I practice a religion that I'm the god of that actually makes my life worse than if I didn't practice anything at all? I've created a self-deprecating, hollow faith because I don't have any mooring. But on the other side of that, Jesus is listening to he's linking into a practice within the religious system itself of prophetic practice, where there are individuals who call into account how the religious is it staying linked to the thing of the past? Is it keeping the heartbeat of the practice true, real, and good? And those things pull apart at some point.
So I'm just going to add one more thing, and then we're going to break up into our conversation groups. But here's the thing that I would say concerns me, okay? Is I think you can either be cynical or self-aware. But where about, I'm going to guess 70% of us in this room get in trouble is that we're both cynical and aware of it, and we cycle back in ourselves like a mouth eating its own stomach. And then we get paralyzed when it comes to faith. Because we're so self-aware that we can't really enter into the traditional practices. We're so cynical that we even critique ourselves trying to still hold on to faith. It's paralyzing.
Okay. And this is the place where I was pushing on saying I and we, and that demarcation between the individual and the communal. And that the place where that stops is in communities of trust and authenticity, where we form a circle, just for analogy, that if you, me, and Ryan, and like we pulled in some other people who don't look and act like us, and we began to put our authentic selves forward and allow other people to help us in that critique, that communal practice undoes the hyper-individualism, and it keeps the practice of the whole in check. And that's where that real fake thing has to be talked about, otherwise you end up with this vacuum.
All right, so we're not ready yet as a community to talk about individualism. That's too personal, so we're going to talk about something external. So put the question up on the screen, Alex. Here's your question for conversation. Is it important what things originally meant? So for instance, whether it's crosses or the phylactery or whatever it is it important? This is just abstract.
is it important what things originally meant, or is it more important what they mean now or what they mean to you? So we're going to talk about things like crosses or necklaces or whatever, because it's easier as a starting place to talk about something external. But we have two more weeks in the series, and by the end, we're going to end up talking about how to be an individual in this community. Okay? But right now, we're going to talk about external things. So this is more theoretical. Is it important what things originally meant? How important is that to their use and practice today?